I would say that I'm critical of nuclear energy.
Yes, okay, fair enough. You, I believe, are of Oriental ancestry, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
Japanese, perhaps?
That's right.
Uh-huh, Kaku sounds Japanese. Does what happened, Professor, in Japan, what the United States did at the end of the war in Japan, does that in any way, do you think that your position on nuclear power is shaped by what happened in Japan?
I don't think so, in the sense that I went the other way. I thought that any technology that was that powerful, any technology that could flatten the city within a microsecond,
yes,
should have enormous benefits for the rest of the world. So when I was very young, I was quite enamored of nuclear technology. You know, I built an atom smasher when I was in high school. And I assembled 400 pounds of transformer steel. I wound 22 miles of copper wire on the football field. And I created a 2.3 million electron volt betatron electron accelerator in my garage.
Didn't that disturb people?
Well, every time I plugged it in, I would blow out every circuit breaker in the house. And all the lights would dim. And my poor mother, you know, she probably said to herself, why couldn't I have a son who plays basketball? Maybe if I buy him a baseball, he'll find something suitable. And she once said, for God's sake, why can't he find a Japanese girl?
Yeah.
What's wrong with him, building these machines in the garage?
Was your mom first-generation Japanese?
Well, she was actually, my father and mother were actually in the relocation camps, the concentration camps in California during World War II.
Okay, then I double my question down. I mean, a history like that, Professor, I didn't know that history of you, but I suspected a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really dig deep, there's got to be a part of you that all of that comes home to shape.
Well, my parents were, first of all, were citizens of the United States.
Yes,
my parents were born in California.
Yes, sir.
My grandfather was in the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. He was part of the cleanup operation during the earthquake. And so, but, you know, even if you are citizens, you could be still arrested.
You know, we apologized for those. And then we paid money. And do you know what? We didn't change the ability of a president to be able to do it again. Did you know that?
Yeah, they're still on the books.
Yeah, it's still on the books.
The McCarran Act.
That's right.
Still on the books. The Supreme Court has never touched that. It's a minefield. So
right.
It's still on the books, basically.
Exactly right. Something for people to know. It could be done again. And
it's kind of sobering. Within a matter of months, 100,000 people just shipped off to racetracks and then to these camps.
You bet. And all of that, somehow, Professor, all of that has got to shape you.
Yes. However, when I was young, like I said, I was very much pro-nuclear because this was the nuclear age. Atoms for Peace was what everyone was talking about. I personally wanted to go to the extreme in the sense of working on Einstein's unified field theory. I mean, that to me was the ultimate atomic physics. But I was, very much pro-nuclear in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But then I began, as a graduate student, I began to have doubts about this technology.
And what fed those? In other words, what began those doubts?
Why? Well, I began to hear about these incidents. I began to hear about the fatalities, even though we were told no one has ever died in a nuclear accident. And I was just a graduate student. I had heard that, bombs had essentially gone out of control. I had heard that workers had been blown up, seven of them. Had been blown up in supercriticality accidents. And then when I became a professor, I have access to files. I can get the files now. So I begin to realize there was this whole hidden history that nuclear power plants are quite unstable unless you are very, very careful. And it's an unforgiving technology.
Well,
one mistake and it blows up in your face.
Well, all right, suppose I made the argument, and I will because I'm devil's advocate every now and then, but look, here in Nevada, we built a great big dam. During the building of that dam to create electricity for Southern California now and Southern Nevada, well, gee, a lot of people died in the building of that dam. So accidents do happen when you're dealing with the creation of large projects in energy, a certain amount of accidents do happen, period. I mean, people fell into that as a concrete tomb and died, and I forget how many died, but a substantial number. So what about factoring that in?
Well, the difference is that if a nuclear power plant spins out of control, you can lose an entire city. The government did a computer study of reactors like Indian Point, located about 20 miles north of where I'm sitting right now. And a big accident at Indian Points 2 and 3 would cause about $300 billion in property damage, would literally obliterate the entire New York area. And there are, you know, 20 million people that live within 50 miles of that nuclear power plant. And it, in some sense, if you take a look at the cold accounting of the numbers, it is perhaps the most dangerous commercial machine on the planet Earth. And that was in $1980. In 2003 dollars, that would probably be in excess of $1 trillion property damage if those reactors ever went up in smoke. And if anyone today were to ask the government permission to site a nuclear power plant so close to New York City, they would say, you're out of your mind. There's no way we're going to site a nuclear power plant that close to a city.